B-Pod Studios.
Bap. This is not your conventional sports radio show.
It's a lot of fun, right? You're having fun.
Dutcher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Celtics will play Toronto tonight in Game 3 of their Eastern Conference semifinal best of seven series. Celtics lead 2-0, and Kyle Draper covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. They'll have pregame, halftime, and postgame coverage of tonight's game on NBC Sports Boston. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Kyle, good morning.
Hey, what's up, fellas? How y'all doing this morning?
We're doing great. Celtics lead 2-0. I don't think anyone thought that this would be the case after two games, right?
No, I don't think so. I had this as a seven-game, you know, knockout, drag-out fight, hard fought between two, you know, great teams. And to me, what it's showing to me is that the Raptors, even though they have that championship pedigree, they just aren't ready yet. They are missing that guy. And when you look at the Celtics, they have a number of guys that, and we saw it the other day, that at any point can take over a game. The Raptors, I don't know, man. They seem kind of shook to me. They seem out of sorts. You know, a staple of Raptors basketball is the ball moving around. A lot of guys cutting, flashing. You know, the Celtics defense has really bottled them up through the first two games.
You know, you mentioned the defense. I was just about to get to that because, to me, that's the biggest story front and center of the first two games. On paper, the Raptors guy, if it is the guy, is Pascal Siakam. They pay him like the guy. They just signed a massive contract. Kyle Lowry is another guy, and so is Fred VanVleet. But none of the three have been consistently effective through the first two games. And that's because the Celtics have played that knockdown, drag-out defense that Brad Stevens wants.
Yeah, and when you look at the matchup, I thought the Raptors would have an advantage with their big guys, Gasol and Ibaka. And I thought the Celtics on a perimeter could do a good job. Think about it. Van Vliet is undersized. Lowry is undersized. Siakam's the big mystery, though. This guy was an all-star, you know, a most improved player a year ago. And you talk about, you know, his, you know, numbers against the Celtics. Let's go back to the seeding game. I mean, he's shooting about 33% over his last three games against the Celtics, and they have not figured out a way to get him untracked, you know, on track. And so give the credit to Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and that Celtics defense. I don't know if you're Nick Nurse, what do, right? You know, maybe you shake up the lineup, but I expect tonight's game to be, you know, sort of the Raptors' last stand. If they're going to get back in this series, they need to come out fired up, energetic right from the get-go. You know, that first game, they sleptwalked through that. The second game, they played harder, but then, you know, folded down the stretch. And so tonight's the night. I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, Kyle, what do you think Toronto can do? For example, I think Serge Ibaka has actually played pretty well off the bench for them. Could they possibly take Anunoby out, maybe go big early on or not start Gasol? What changes could Toronto make off the bat to, you know, start off strong, like you mentioned?
I would say take out Marc Gasol, and I know he had a positive plus-minus last game, but I'm not a big believer in that. When you look at the Celtics and what they do, you got to have guys that can guard the perimeter. Marc Gasol, you know, a former Defensive Player of the Year, those days are long gone for him. He's just a step slow out there on both ends of the floor. You know, I think, honestly, when I watch this game, the one guy the Celtics don't have an answer for is Serge Ibaka. I think Ibaka could be huge in this series, and so I expect Nick Nurse to make a change in the starting lineup. Usually he's, you know, open to making changes and being unconventional. I wouldn't go big if I'm him, just because how do you guard on the other end? But I would go Ibaka at the five, keep OG in there, and take Marc Gasol out.
All right, you mentioned the bench, and that's long been considered the Celtics' weakness. I mean, they are thin as far as scoring goes off the bench. But then up steps Robert Williams in the first half last night, and he actually hit a jumper. I almost fainted. He hit a jumper from beyond the foul line. Most of his shots, and you will agree with this, Kyle, have to do with dunking the basketball. But he knocked down a jumper. He was unconscious in the first half. And Brad Stevens, you saw it, said after the first quarter, only reason we're in the game is because of Robert Williams. If Robert Williams can give you that kind of pop off the bench on both ends of the floor, and defensively, I thought he was good in the pick and roll too, Celtics have something here.
Yeah, exactly. And let's not forget he was a first-round pick, and I know he was a late first-round pick, but this is we've seen flashes of Robert Williams doing this. You know, I recall that San Antonio game where the Celtics, you know, won huge and he went off. You know, we've seen that from him. But it's crazy to think that we thought the Raptors bench would have the edge, and the Celtics bench has been totally outplaying the Raptors bench, and a big reason why is Robert Williams. I think this is just a favorable matchup for him, especially if a guy like Marc Gasol is in the game. You know, I think Gasol is just too slow to guard the perimeter and get back to guarding Robert Williams on the roll to the basket. And so, you know, if you look at Robert Williams' numbers against the Raptors, they're phenomenal, right? I mean, this guy has had success every time he's played against this team. But like you said, it was mostly dunks and around the basket. He showed a 15 to 17 foot jumper we really haven't seen. And if he keeps giving us that production, you're right. You know, the sky's the limit in terms of getting to the NBA Finals for this team.
All right, Kyle, I need your answer on this one. I know you're with Scal, and you all you guys are there for pregame and postgame. Wallach has called many games. I have never called a game. I know you've called games. Do the Celtics have better chemistry without Gordon Hayward on the floor?
No, that's why. Well, how can you say something like that? I mean, that's just, you know, that's an afternoon kind of 2 to 6 kind of topic. You guys
amen, bro. That's exactly right.
I mean, do you know the record, though?
Yeah, no.
It's not
the record. No,
they 25 games. They won 19. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, but look at the record when any of the Celtics are out. You know, whether it's one guy, Kemba's out, or Jaylen Brown's out. Usually they play better record-wise when they're missing someone. I just think, you know, Philly was a dumpster fire, so I'm throwing away that series. Marcus Smart has played much better. Let's keep it honest, guys. Much better than we expected offensively. We knew about his defense. I didn't expect him to make 11 threes through the first two games, and so he's giving you some of that stuff that Gordon Hayward did. But with that being said, you need Gordon Hayward. If we're talking about winning a title, you need Gordon Hayward.
I agree with that. No, I just think that they're better.
Joe, my problem with your take is you have two polar opposite things. And Kyle, follow me on this. Joe's point is they need Gordon Hayward, but they have better chemistry without Gordon Hayward. Yeah. I don't understand.
Yeah,
that.
No, I think if,
well, hold on, let's get it okay. In parcel. All right. Do you understand those two things?
No, because they seem to work opposite of each other, right? They seem
yes.
to be, if you need Gordon Hayward, then you need the chemistry he brings, right?
So,
you need, if you don't have Gordon Hayward and you have the chemistry, you still don't win the championship. And so it's good enough now to beat a Philadelphia, a flawed Toronto team, because, you know, as good as Siakam and Lowry are, they aren't Kawhi Leonard, you know. Next series, can you beat a Jimmy Butler and that Miami team? Can you beat Giannis? Or can you win the finals against the Lakers or the Clippers? And so, you know, you may say the chemistry is good. It's good when you're winning, you know, when things are going well. But let's see them face some adversity. You guys are ready to write off Gordon Hayward like he's not a valuable, crucial part of this team. I'm not willing to do that yet.
Okay. Would you start him over?
Him, right?
Would you start him over Marcus Smart? If he comes back.
Now, that's something that it is. But when he comes back, does he step back into the starting lineup, Kyle, or do you bring him off the bench?
If I'm Brad Stevens, I bring him off the bench because here's why. I do agree things are looking great now with Marcus Smart out there running the point. Him running the point moves Kemba off the ball, takes some of the pressure off Kemba. And you got a valuable offensive weapon you can bring off the bench. You know, think about Gordon Hayward with that second unit being the featured guy. You know, probably one of the best second unit options in the league, you know, behind, let's say, a guy like Lou Williams. And so I would bring Gordon off the bench. No slander to Gordon or anything like that, but he could be that Manu Ginobili six-man kind of guy that comes in and still gets you 15 to 20 points a game. But I do like what I'm seeing from Marcus Smart right now, and it, you know, I think getting off to good starts is key for this Celtics team. And if you got Marcus Smart out there, you're right. I mean, they do look good right now with Marcus Smart. Why mess that up?
So, last question: what's it like watching a game with Gorman and Scal and all them?
Ah, man, you know, it's funny because Gorman is, you know, kind of reserved, kind of chill, kind of laid back. You know, Scal is over there making, you know, noises and sounds like, oh, you know, it's so different. You know, it's funny. You could tell when something good just happened because Scal is up and, you know, he's making his noises. But, you know, I don't know if you guys have been watching. We got Perk on the broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just, oh, my gosh. You talk about trying to be a ringmaster and trying to keep everybody in line. That's been difficult, challenging, but also fun these last couple of months.
Perk in the last year has become a bona fide star. And by the way, it's a good thing you have him on Zoom because I don't think there's enough room for everybody in that one room. So that's a good thing. So you guys have pregame, halftime, and postgame tonight, right?
Yes. And the great thing about the halftime show, zero commercials. We're going 15 straight minutes. You know, while the game is in half, me, Scal, and Perk, we're breaking it down for you. And then our postgame show is supposed to be an hour. But like I said, with Scal and Perk, man, you never know. It could go an hour and a half. It could go an hour and 45. You never know with those guys. So, yeah, it all starts tonight at 5:30, though.
All right, Kyle, thanks a lot.
All right, guys, thanks for having me.
Kyle Draper, NBC Sports Boston. We'll continue on with the Celtics discussion if you want. We'll mix back in some Patriots and a lot of other things. It is Wallach, it's Murray, it's Lockhart. We're here till 10 o'clock, Thursday edition of the Toucher and Rich Show here on 98.5 The Sports Zone.
Drive home with Felger and Mass this afternoon at 2. Right now, this is how Boston sports fans start the day. Toucher and Rich on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Just heard from Kyle Draper of NBC Sports Boston. Celtics gearing up to play Toronto. Game 3 of their best of 7 second round playoff series tonight in the bubble in Orlando. Celtics leading 2-0. And now the big question, Joe Murray, is what happens this evening? We saw the Celtics blow Toronto's doors off in game 1 and then take a pretty good shot from Toronto early and then again in the third quarter. And they were still able to rally and win, but the odds of Marcus Smart hitting 5 straight threes to carry you back into the game and give you the lead are kind of slim. Although it is Marcus. Anything can happen with him offensively on any given night. But now the question is, how do these two teams adjust? And if I'm the Celtics, you just keep doing what you're doing. What does Toronto do on offense to get themselves better opportunities? It seemed that they went away from trying to post up Pascal Siakam in the second half. And Serge Ibaka, for as big as he is, and the Celtics, relatively speaking, are a small team, without Robert Williams out there, it seems that they were content to let Serge Ibaka float around on the outside. Now, he's making a ton of threes, but it takes away an advantage you have there with Marc Gasol off the floor.
So Kyle mentioned replacing Gasol with Ibaka. But if you look at that in the long run, you're going to have Gasol coming off the bench against Robert Williams. I just don't think that works for them. That's desperation. What I think you do is you start both bigs and you try to get them to play their half court.
Start Gasol and Ibaka. Who do you take off the floor?
You're going to take out Anunoby and put Siakam at the three.
See, Anunoby has been a big three-point threat for them.
I understand that.
So you're willing to make more twos.
I think they're a better
and half, not make as many threes.
I think they're a better half court team that needs rebounding to go into transition.
Well, the other part of it is Kyle Lowry really hasn't shown up yet. Right. And I thought he would show up a lot more in game 2. That's the guy who's the difference maker. Defensively, and I can't stand, he's a great player, but I can't stand the fact that he runs in front of guys and falls down. Statistically, I think he took more charges than anyone else in the NBA this year. And that's because he will dash over from the corner when someone's driving the lane, make sure he gets in front of them, and because he's smaller than everyone else, flops and makes it look a lot worse than it should. He's got all the veteran tricks, but offensively, he has to trust the ankle and score more. And I think if he does, Celtics will have their hands full.
The flip side of that, as you mentioned, Siakam stopped posting up. They were on the more on the perimeter. Now, what does that do for the Celtics defense? Like, does this work into what they do? Because we know Tice can guard the perimeter. I mean, he's not great out there, but he can do it. And then again, Robert Williams, not his strength.
Yeah.
So
if they go into more of a half court, then that takes Robert Williams out of the game. Robert Williams, a good shot blocker, and I mentioned earlier, very good in the pick and roll in game two. But for his size, not a really good rebounder.
They'll expose that today. They'll look at the tape and they'll see
that. That's what I'm saying. If you make it a half court game, you're going to need Daniel Tice out there for 35 minutes at least. I mean, Robert Williams played almost 20 minutes in game two. He'll see his playing time significantly reduced if Toronto converts it into, for lack of a better phrase, kind of like a rock fight. And that leads me to my next point. We saw a big, big difference in the style of game from game one to game two. Game one, a lot of scoring, a lot of up and down. Celtics controlled Toronto in transition. Game two, 102-99. Big, big difference. How is this game tonight going to play out? And you've seen it in the NBA the last few playoff games. You saw it again last night. You saw it in game seven, Utah-Denver game. You saw it with the Celtics. Scoring is now down. Scoring was way up during the seeding games in the bubble. But now that we're getting deeper into the playoffs, defense is kind of carrying the day. And that's fine for teams like the Celtics and Toronto, but for those people who love to watch offense, it's going to be difficult to come by, I think, for the rest of the series.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. And you know what happened was, we saw that scoring at the beginning of the bubble, and then things started changing when the playoffs came around. Defense became more of the thing. So now you come back after like a week layoff and they had one game where everybody scored. All the games seemed to be high after that first game. And then it went back to a lower defensive scoring. So I think that trend's going to continue.
Now, the question is, do more fans tune in for something like that? For me, I'm a huge basketball fan. Yeah. I love the game. I'll watch a game like that. I loved watching the 80-78 game that Denver beat Utah. Well, it came right down to literally the last shot, which was three quarters of the way down and popped out. I love games like that, but I don't know if the rest of America does.
It's just sports right now. It's just like, oh, great, something's on television. I mean, I love to wake up from a nap and be like, oh, great, there's a game on right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. And for people, I know, we bitch and moan about this too much, but for people on this program that have to wake up early, I'll take 5:30 and 6:30 games every day.
The last four games have been spectacular.
Yes.
The Celtics came down to the final run. There was a three-point game. The Denver-Utah game came down to the final shot. Last night was a foul. There hasn't been a game that ended on a foul shot since like 1974. I read that last night. It hasn't happened since the early 70s.
And that happened with no time left last night. Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, no, exactly. A game was decided on a free throw.
Why did he shoot two free throws? The game's over. He hit one.
I know.
For the cover.
That's what I was like, this is a gambling thing?
Actually, if you want to really know, the second half line was -$5. So he hit both, and now it was -4.
Wow.
They didn't cover.
There you have
it. True story.
There you have it. I didn't know that.
And then if we really want to get into details, the Rockets game.
Scott,
all right. Just go to my Twitter.
Let's do this.
Just watch. Where's Scott? Scott Foster was literally, if we're in Dorchester, that dude was in Weymouth.
Okay.
Okay, and he made the call from there, okay?
Okay, so let's get into this because you brought it up during the Bankroll Boys segment. And after that, when Dan Lifschitz was here, we had an extended period of time with the two of you guys in the 7 o'clock hour. Somehow the country of China has entered into this. Could you explain the China angle as far as referees making calls and not making calls? Because this is wild. I don't know if I believe this, but you have a theory.
Oh, I don't know if I believe it either. No, this is not a Joe theory or a Dan theory or a Bankroll Boy theory.
Oh, I see. But it is a theory.
It is a theory, but there are people out there who think that there was a Chinese angle or a China angle last night. Based off the fact that Houston Rockets games are not being seen in China because of Daryl Morey's comments. And therefore, the NBA would try to keep the Rockets out of the next round so Lakers games can be seen in China. And they thought that that's why they sent Scott Foster in last night. Scott Foster's records in Game 7s versus the Houston Rockets, 0-7. He hates James Harden. And him and Chris Paul were chirping it up before the game, talking about how, well, you've always had our number, Scott, this and that. And Chris Paul's on the other side of things now. And it was a mysterious foul call with 1 second. By the way, it took 13 minutes to finish 30 seconds of the game last night. And Scott Foster called a foul on James Harden from out of nowhere. And they got a free throw. They missed it. And they still had a chance to inbound it, to win the game. But it was a bad out of bounds play.
What do you think, Mike? You in on this?
Sorry, I was talking to Dan. I only heard.
Oh, never mind.
The Chinese theory.
Yeah, China, I don't know. Lifshatz is full of theories, so I always just kind of let him talk. I don't really listen.
That's the best.
I got to tell you, does this help? I mean, this has to help their ratings, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard they're in
the last team. Four or five playoff games have been decided by 4 points or less in the NBA, right? Yeah. So, I mean, there's been some really good games to watch. Not only in the early window, but in the late window, if you decided to stay up late. I mean, these games are fantastic. And the best part is there's no home court advantage. So you could come right back and get that the next day between these two teams.
By the way, I think that's what favors the Celtics the most in this playoffs out of every team. They found that spot in the bubble, man. They can shoot. They don't have to go on the road. They have so many options to defend. And I don't want to jump on the train, man.
I'm
but
on.
They have defied the odds. They've defied the wrangle. They have, at this point right now, like, I if the Celtics win today, I think it's over. I think it's over.
You're up three games.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I think they're a better matchup against the Bucks. I think, like, the Bucks, the Celtics somehow, it's a better matchup. The Heat are hard to defend.
Well, I mean, you saw the game the Celtics played against Miami in the bubble. Miami was without Jimmy Butler, and they still went and beat them pretty handily. They were really blowing them away until the Celtics made it close late. But I am shocked that Milwaukee did not play well last night. They were in the game at the end, and they might have gotten screwed by a ref's call. They shouldn't have been there. Yeah. Miami let them back in the last 5 minutes. The Heat may be the team playing the best out of anybody.
Totally agree.
In the bubble right now.
And
if these series leads hold and the Celtics wind up playing Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals and people look at it and go, well, Bucks are out of the way, then we're fine. You're not fine.
You're not. And if you're looking ahead, the Celtics have played outstanding against the Clippers and Lakers. And I know they got to get there first. Don't get me wrong. I think the Clippers and Lakers, one of those teams.
But the Celtics always
play well against those teams.
Well, no, and that's the thing. That's the thing in watching the Celtics and Miami, for that matter. If you and Brad Stevens said it after game two, we're at a point now that we're not blowing games. Every game we go into, we may lose, but the other team's going to have to beat us. We're not going to hand games over. And all you can ask for entering these playoffs is that the Celtics be a tough out before we knew that they'd get on this roll. The Celtics are a pain in the ass to play. It doesn't matter if you're the Lakers, the Clippers, Miami, Milwaukee, Toronto. They're a pain in the ass to play. And that's all you can ask for because they weren't favored going in. 617-779-0985. We'll have the stack coming up next. Thursday edition of the Toucher and Rich program. We're here till 10 o'clock. Wallach, Murray, and Lockhart here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is the home of the Bruins, the Celtics, and these guys. Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
And the stack is sponsored by Window Nation. It's Window Nation's buy two, get two free sale. No down payment, no payments, and 0% financing for 12 full months. Check my guys out at windownation.com. John Wallach, Joe Murray here till 10 o'clock. I'm told it's Adam Jones and Christian Arkin today for the midday. So enter at your own risk. Let's touch on the Patriots real quick before we get to the three other stories we have in mind. We all know by now, and if you're a Patriots fan, you know by now, the Patriots released Mohamed Sanu last night. Kind of surprising, but not shocking, considering his production over the eight games he was with the Patriots. But again, a disaster of a trade. He gave up a second-round draft pick for a guy who really didn't contribute all that much. and at best, according to many people who covered the team, he was going to be the number four wide receiver on this team this year, who didn't contribute at all on special teams, really. As we've gone over multiple times, he really can't return punts all that well. So the fact that he's gone is amazing. And if you look at the overall talent the Patriots have at the wide receiver position, given you don't know exactly what N'Keal Harry's going to give you, to let go of a guy who at least has some kind of pedigree and has been in the league for some length of time, that tells you exactly what they thought about Mohamed Sanu. But the new news today, and this was broken by Mike Reese of ESPN, is that Damian Harris, the would-be lead back heading into week one of the regular season, which is a week from Sunday, Damian Harris has a hand injury that's forced him to miss the last two games. He may not be ready for the beginning of the regular season. I don't know if we should be very worried, considering we're not really sure what the expectations are for this team this year and the depth at the running back position for the Patriots. But it's like the Sanu thing last night, Joe. It's kind of something that makes you sit up and go, oh, boy, how are things going to break down now?
Yeah, when it comes to Damian Harris, second-year guys in the system usually produce, right? Shane Vereen was a guy that did that. James White was another.
They both got redshirt years, came back in year two and really produced.
And yes. Really produced. And there's like high expectations for this kid who's at Alabama. He was in a two-back system there. He's got a hurt hand. There's talks he could miss the opener. So my thing is, could it bleed past that? Would they put him on the PUP list to start the season?
I don't know. And you have Sony Michel, who's banged up as it is.
Yeah, and then Lamar Miller. You know, I mean, we just talked to Jim McBride, who mentioned that guys in this case normally don't make the team, but they're probably going to need him, right, at this point?
Yeah, you're going to have to do something. I mean, it depends on how long this injury is. It's a broken hand, maybe. I mean, that could be 6 weeks in a cast or something. Could be even longer. I mean, what if they lose this guy for 12 weeks because he's got broken
hands? Wait a minute. We went from the opener to 6 weeks to 12
I'm talking worst case
about
scenario.
A minute.
I mean, hey.
But, I mean, hey, someone's going to have to block for Cam, right, too? I mean, he's going to be...
Someone just turned on the radio and said, Lockhart said 12 weeks. This is how it works.
Yeah.
You got to be careful.
It's not ideal. And, again, you just cut Sanu. You don't know. So let's just hypothetically say the Pats go three wide receiver sets.
See, the thing is, I don't know if they could do that right now. That's the thing. Can they really go three wideouts?
Like Harry, Edelman.
And Bird.
Myers, Bird.
Can you really do
Olszewski?
That? I don't know if you can. And this is one of those seasons where Gunner's going to get regular time on offense. That's the way it's breaking down, isn't it?
No.
I mean, think about what you have after Julian Edelman and N'Keal Harry. And you're not sure what you're going to get out of Harry. I mean, opinions seem to vary wildly about what you're going to get. I'm a Harry guy.
H-A-R-R-Y.
Yeah. I'm a N'Keal Harry guy. But ultimately, you don't know what you're going to get out of him. You don't know if he can stay on the field. And then after that, what do you have?
And just quickly, they're having offensive line issues right now. David Andrews wasn't at practice. Isaiah Wynn. We'll see what happens today.
Just a mess.
If they're going to run the football, you're going to need an offensive line. They couldn't do it in the playoffs last year against the Titans.
And by the way, another piece of news, Stephen Gostkowski, in case you missed it, last hour, news was broken. Gostkowski signed with the Titans today, and he will kick for them.
I give Zoe credit on that one.
Yeah. He was on it. He was on it all the way through. Another interesting story that I know nothing about, but it's a good thing you're here, Joe, because you can kind of help us out with this. Michael Jordan is signed on with DraftKings. I know DraftKings is very prominent in the market. Lots of people I know play. I'm sure everyone you know plays. But what is the significance of Michael Jordan signing on with DraftKings?
Well, I think its name, like Barstool came out and kind of crapped all over. Like, oh, it's not going to help them. I just find it weird that an owner of an NBA team is going to have some sort of stake in DraftKings. Love DraftKings. Love everything that they do. Great sponsors here to the station here. But I don't know. Maybe he's a guy that people who, oh, hey, Jordan just signed with DraftKings. Let's look into it. We see what happens with his sneakers and his memorabilia. The more that I look at it, though, like, is he going to be, you know, giving them like direction or insight or anything like
that? Is he doing commercials with picks?
I think that's what this is. It's to put a face to a big name like McDonald's and Jordan.
Right. It's going to be a brand thing where he's just a face and like people, and it's like, hey, Michael Jordan loves DraftKings. Otherwise, I mean, he's not making decisions on who's working at DraftKings.
But you would have to get the permission of the NBA commissioner to do this, right? Adam Silver has to sign off on this. right?
I think Kraft has an involvement as well.
And I know, but I mean, it's one of those things. Well, Kraft, it's different with Kraft. Kraft is on the inside ring. He and the commissioner are buds now. They've all kissed and made up. But truth be told, Kraft is a power broker in the NFL. He basically single-handedly negotiated the labor agreement. Remember Jeff Saturday, the players' union, and him? He sat in the same room, and they hammered out a deal, not the one they were playing under now, but the 10-year deal before that. Kraft saved the NFL back then. I mean, he's in a different league. Jordan, while the best basketball player of all time, is not in the inner circle of NBA owners, is he? I mean, it's a little different. I think the rules are a little different.
Well, I don't know. I watched that last stand or whatever, and I think Jordan said he's never bet on games. He only bets on himself. And now he is
betting on games or endorsing betting on games.
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
It is kind of a little odd. Yeah. But I mean, you would figure Adam Silver would have to be involved in some way, shape, or form, right? And speaking of gambling, the Cubs have some news, correct?
The Cubs are going to open a sports book at Wrigley Field or in Wrigleyville.
Wow.
So another reason to go to Wrigley is you can actually bet from there.
Have you ever been to Wrigley Field?
I have not, no.
I've seen, I know you have it, Joe. I have. I actually, for my father's 60th birthday, we organized a big trip out to Chicago and saw the game. I've only been to Wrigley once. The one game I was there for, they had the single worst take me out to the ball game singer. I mean, this is like an all-timer. You know who I had?
Who?
The seventh inning? B. Arthur. I had B. Arthur saying, take me out to the ball game. She was horrible. Little did I know that I was there for history, because if you look back over, you talk to anyone from Chicago, or you look back over the worst take me out to the ball game singers, B. Arthur is always in the top five, and I was there for it.
What movie was it when they wanted B. Arthur nudes? What was that from? I remember somebody ordered them one day. Ah, come on.
Dan, no feel idea. Free to chime in. B. Arthur Nudes, you got any answers for that?
I got nothing on that. But I do have this, John.
What's that?
I'm a hairy guy.
Yeah.
I'm a hairy guy.
Yeah, that's
gonna
I got live.
That, John.
That's going to live for a while.
That's what I've been working on.
That's going to live for a while. Yep.
This just came out a minute ago. This baffles. I'm baffled. The Nets have named a new head coach.
Oh, who's that? Yeah,
you haven't seen it, right?
No, I have not.
To guess. I'll give you three guesses.
Ty Lue.
Nope.
Oh, boy. It's not Tyronn Lue. Because you figure Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are driving the bus here. So it's got to be someone that will bend to their will. I don't know. I give up. Who is it?
Steve Nash.
Oh, my God. You're kidding. That's not true.
It is true.
Steve Nash is the new head coach of the Brooklyn Nets?
Steve Nash is, yes.
That franchise is going in. Look, I understand Steve Nash is a name and one of the better point guards of the last 25 years. He won, what, back-to-back MVPs, right? He won two MVPs running D'Antoni's offense in Phoenix. He's not a head coach.
Nash
He's
not even coach close. Kyrie Durant. How is that going to happen? How is that going to go?
Well, right. Steve's going to say, yes, sir. What offense do you want to run? Yes, sir. He's a name. That's all he is.
Did they do better than like fifth place next year? Because I would imagine they're not going to try in the regular season. And then who knows what's going to happen with the bubble. But they're not going to try in the regular season. And then they're going to end up hating each other because that team is full of just guys that hate everybody. I think that this is going to be an absolute disaster.
It's
for the
a Woj bomb. I'm looking at it right now. It's a 4-year contract. Haven't they spent enough money? I mean, on a lot of other guys. I mean, Kenny Atkinson is not. Kenny Atkinson, from all I've heard, is a really good head coach who just didn't get along with the power structure, didn't get along with Kyrie. Kevin Durant didn't play for him and didn't get along with Kevin Durant, and Durant and Kyrie got together and got him out of there. I mean, if the Houston Rockets were worth a damn, they'd hire Kenny Atkinson and change that offense a little bit.
So, but who's going to be on the staff?
Steve Nash is the new head coach. So,
by
of
the way,
Brooklyn.
Steve Nash.
One less team to worry about.
Huge pothead.
Really?
Pothead.
Well, isn't everybody in the NBA?
Well, that's true.
That's a good point.
Oh, he loved that kind, but I got to tell you, that Canadian butt out there. Real quick, the B. Arthur Nudes Airheads.
Oh, that's right.
Remember they had a list of demands that they wanted?
That's right.
I think it was Adam Sandler who wanted the B. Arthur Nudes. Are you going to play our demo tape or what? What was the guy's name? Oh, come on. Oh, Dan, you got to know this one. What was the guy's name, the DJ that they had?
Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser, but was he like Handsome Dan, or am I mixing up movies?
Yeah, Handsome Dan was Wayne's World.
That was Wayne's World.
All right, never mind then.
Yeah. Who was the guy who did B for a day? He drew one B. Arthur picture every day. He was a friend of this show.
Oh, yeah.
Who was that guy?
Chris DeRoy, was it?
No, it wasn't DeRoy.
Yeah.
It was somebody else. But you know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. That, yeah.
It was weird, too, because when we used to do the shows down at the golf tournament, TPC Boston, he was actually working there as a volunteer.
Oh, yeah.
It was the weirdest thing. I just ran into him. He was like helping park cars. Hey, I know you. It's weird. But yeah, be a day. I forget what it was. But yeah.
This Steve Nash thing is crazy to me.
I don't understand that at all. There's no reason for it.
Who's going to coach? Is it Durant or is it Kyrie?
I think the two of them are just going to be on the road, get together, and said, all right, what do you want the starting lineup to look
crazy.
Like today? No, it is a player-driven league, but this is an extreme case. There wasn't even a whisper of Steve Nash. Ty Lue at least has some experience of getting not bullied around by LeBron James. You would think a guy with a track record like that would be the new head coach for Kyrie Irving, who's familiar with him. And Kevin Durant, what did Tyronn Lue do to piss off those two guys to not get that job?
Wasn't Jason Kidd in the running, or is that
something? Yeah, no, Jason Kidd wanted that job, too.
He would have been go back to the Nets. Like,
yeah.
It's like, what happened there?
And Dan, in my headphones, made a good point. Greg Popovich was actually tied into that vacancy, the Brooklyn vacancy.
That's right. I remember
and
that.
Popovich would have looked at it. But the thing is, this is how the conversation went. The Brooklyn people called Popovich and like, look, we know you're not with San Antonio. We know you're on your way out there. You know, why don't you come coach for us? And Popovich said, are Kyrie and Durant in charge? And the Brooklyn people said yes. And it click would have hung
up. Popovich to Steve Nash?
I'm just blown away by this.
It just makes no sense to me.
I mean, people in the Celtics front office have to be doubled over. We didn't have Danny Ainge on today, but you have to figure Danny Ainge, upon hearing this news, is doubled over in laughter. And, you know, Brad Stevens gets the phone call in the bubble and hears that Steve Nash is going to be the head coach of Brooklyn. And, you know, Brad's not the type of guy to laugh at anyone. He's just like, shake his head.
How many other former MVPs have been a head coach? I don't, maybe I'm putting this all on the spot here, but.
Larry Bird, Magic Johnson.
Larry Bird. Bird was good.
Those are two. Right off the bat. Magic was a horrible head coach.
Wasn't Jordan like a player coach or something at one point?
No, he was a player owner.
Right. Okay.
For the Wizards. Yeah. I don't know. Who was the unfortunate head coach when Jordan came back and played? I don't even know. But yeah, that's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate. One quick thing before we leave. Protests, anthem protests are back for the National Football League. I think it's widely known that people are going to be kneeling when the anthem is played before NFL games. There's been talk about not playing it before games anymore or playing it so far in advance before the players hit the field. And that doesn't make any sense because there are no fans in the stands for most of these games. But Dak Prescott announced yesterday, anthem protests should be an individual decision. And what that means to me is there's a lot of chaos surrounding this in Dallas. Jerry Jones has been noticeably quiet about this. People were waiting for Jerry to say something for the longest time. And now Dak says this. I think pregame for Dallas is going to be must watch. Because I think, and I think speak for everyone here, I think most all NFL teams are going to have a unified front. Everyone will kneel the way things are now.
Yeah, that sounds to me like Jones laid out a plan for them and said, this is what we're going to do. Because remember, he came out like one Monday night. They all kneeled together for a second and they stood up. I guarantee he's trying to orchestrate something where they all do it together and then they stand up.
For whatever reason, Jerry has been very slow. And you were talking about power brokers. In the National Football League, Jerry Jones is in the inner circle as well in the National Football League. And to have him be this undecided in the political climate we have is very curious. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement is huge. And there are more than a few African-American football players. And I think you will see the majority, if not every NFL team outside of Dallas, kneel for the anthem. And the fact that Dallas is the outlier has a potentially damaging outcome here.
But will we see it anyways?
If the networks are smart, they would.
No, show, I guess the networks aren't.
Will the Cowboys do it anyway?
I would imagine. I mean, if it sounds like the players, if Dak Prescott's saying, you know, it should be left up to individuals.
What I'm saying, though, is I don't think us as the viewer are going to see what happens.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The network, if they're smart enough, they would put that on there because people would tune in.
Yeah, exactly. You're right.
Dak Prescott believes it should be an individual choice. Quote, that's what this country is about, the freedom to do that, the freedom to express yourself. That's a long-winded way of saying I'm not stepping in front of this train. And it's unfortunate because that's what that could create a lot of problems, create more problems than it solves. All right, Mike Lockhart, enjoy your long weekend.
Thank you. I can't. I'm peeling out of here.
I know. I'm not going to keep you any longer. So it's going to be me. It's going to be Ted Johnson. It's going to be Joe Murray tomorrow. Dan, you're here. Nick, you're here. Correct? The two of you? I think Dan begrudgingly is going to come back once again. Dan's already got his mask on. He's out of here. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Mike. Enjoy your long 4-day weekend. Thank you, Joe. Ted Johnson's here tomorrow. We'll have Bert Breer in as well. Jones and Arcander next for the Midday Show. Enjoy your Thursday, everyone. Goodbye.